Next year, you'll owe him $32 million. The year after that, you'll owe him another $32 million. So there's $79 million you're looking at with change and interest. $2 million bonus if traded, $81 million. But then again, Zach Greinke, his ERA is under 3. He has 114 strikeouts. But here's the deal. The A's don't make that type of move. They only get rentals. They're not going to pay a guy that type of money. The other thing is, would I trade a Lizardo or a Puck to get that guy? No. Would I trade a Sean Murphy? No. What the A's do is they get guys who have been DFA'd or cut from other teams, or they'll go to a team like the Royals with a fire sale, and they'll get Homer Bailey, who was 1-14 last year. Went to his debut, went to the Coliseum the other day, had a bad second inning, otherwise got the win. Fingers crossed! Let's go to Ross out in San Jose. You're on 95.7 again.
Hi, I just want to say, as a Giants fan my whole life, people talk about, oh, I'm loyal to this team, and oh, these Fairweather fans are horrible. Well, how about being loyal to the players? Because I went to the San Jose Giants games and watched Pablo Sandoval as a catcher. I watched Buster Posey there. I watched Ken Lincecum there. To tell Bruce Bochy, as a manager, your final season, we're going to trade everybody away and get some prospects for the future, what, 4 or 5 years down the line? I think it's just wrong. And I think that if you're going to take that mindset of being loyal to a team, you should also be loyal to these players we watch grow up and do so well and win championships. It's different than the 20 other teams that just lose year after year after year, because the Giants have championship players who we're talking about, not just nobody.
Can I ask you a question, Ross? Is he still there? Can I ask you a question, Ross?
Yeah.
Do you dress for less?
Ha, ha, ha. Very funny.
I know. You heard that 100 times. Ross, thanks for your call, by the way. Yeah, I'm always good for the second-grade humor. I understand what he's saying, though. You know, he's loyal to the players, and he's like, I don't want a guy who's going to do something in 5 years. I understand that. I do. But I think you have squeezed every drop of blood and sweat and every sinew of muscle out of these guys you have now. I don't think they're up for it. I just don't. I don't think this is a team that's going to barnstorm its way to a title this year. And that's really what it should be all about. It shouldn't be just about making the playoffs. These aren't like the Sacramento Kings, who have missed the playoffs for 14 years and they just want to be a damn eighth seed just to stop the rot. I understand what the Kings are trying to do, but not the Giants. You're not going to sacrifice refurbishing your entire farm system and giving your team some hope. Now, if you had never won with these guys, let's try one last time with all these great players. Let's just try it. Well, you have won with these guys. 3 rings, baby. 3. Who would have ever thought that? No one. No one. 3 rings for the Giants? They lost the 62 series. They lost in 89. They lost to the Angels. I went to all 7 of those games. It's just, they weren't going to win a World Series. Now they've won 3. What in the hell? And as Rob Schneider said before the first pitch, it's an even year. We're going to win it again. He said that in 2014, and he was right. Making copies, put your weed in it. He was right. So if they had never won it, but yeah, but, you know, you say you want to stay loyal to the player. Yeah, you know, it's like a guy like Canseco. I loved him. I always rooted for him. But if he's on the Rangers, I'm not going to root for the Rangers to win. I understand you, but I think it would be silly to think that this team's going to win another title when you can cash in. Now, the caller before was right. I think Giants fans are myopic when they think that Bumgarner is going to get some kind of giant haul. He's not. I was talking to a guy in New York who's a writer, and I said, Clint Frazier straight up for Bumgarner, and he laughed. He goes, the Yankees would never do that. Get real. And I remember talking to Giants fans like, okay, Clint Frazier for starters. Then we're going to need 2 of their top 5 prospects, and we're also going to need – no, he doesn't have that type of value anymore. Or does he? Farhan, it's up to you. But, yeah, I remember I went to Muni, and I saw – not Muni in Arizona, but Muni in San Jose. By the way, the second oldest stadium in California. Do you know what the oldest one is? Joe Sherry, do you know the oldest one? You won't get it right, so forget it. Oracle. Good guess. No, Edwards Track Stadium at Cal. I mean, Memorial Stadium was built after World War I, so that's a little bit. Hey, you're a kid. What do you know? Don't call me a kid. All right, good guess, Joe. That's fine. But I went over down to Muni and, you know, got the barbecue, and I remember seeing Posey down there. I wanted to take a look at this kid. You know, what was he, 6th overall to Florida State, a shortstop slash catcher. He was going to be a catcher. And saw Bumgarner down there. And then I saw the guy who was a murderer, unfortunately. What was his name? Villanueva or Villalobos? Or I forgot his name. That one didn't really work out. But I just think you need to give this fan base of yours some hope and quit trotting out, you know, these Longoria type. By the way, Longoria is going to be trotted out for a long time. And just when he starts hitting, he gets hurt, too. So fingers crossed on him. I just don't see the Giants holding on to these guys. I think would be folly. Is it all right? Sorry. After a quick break, Mark Medina. We'll talk a little Dubs. Come on back.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
I told you Herbs was listening because I said he'll be here at 5 and sit in this chair and break it. He texted me. He said, geez, guy grabs one extra donut, and now he's Robert Earl Hughes. I think you have to be our age to get that one. That's the guy, Guinness Book of World Records. He was so fat, he was buried in a piano case. Remember him? Also, people ask me about the British Open. All I know is a fat guy's winning, and I'm all for that. I like it when fat guys do well. Rick, that's some great reporting right there, isn't it, though? So let's go to Mark Medina, the Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News. And a guy who is on point as anybody when it comes to the NBA. And Mark, do you now at this point get a chance to sit down in an easy chair, smoke a pipe, and pet your Labrador Retriever? Or are you still at it?
No, I think after Bob Myers spoke a few days ago, that was kind of the official signal that, okay, everything's done with the season. You know, I've been able to take a few days off to recharge and have some vacations coming up, but it's one of those things that it'll go by quickly because by the end of September, you know, training camp will start. I know there's a lot going on with Chase Center being ready at some point next month, so enjoy it while I can because it won't last long.
I heard from some people that, and this is the same with every arena and every Olympic Village, it's like, oh, it's not going to be ready and there are cost overruns. I don't know. You heard anything like that?
Not as of yet. I already know that it's been over budget. When I talked with Rick Welts, you know, the Warriors president and who's overseeing, you know, this arena, he was mentioning that as of last summer that it was over budget. And at that time, Joe Lacob, the majority owner, told me that it was at around $1.4 billion. It was originally budgeted for $1 billion. So I imagine that that number's gone up even more. But that's kind of one of those things that in the construction business, that's what always happens. And I think in the Warriors' view, it's a positive thing because they're not trying to half-ass it, right? As far as delays, I haven't heard any delays with the arena's construction. But, you know, ever since maybe a year and a half ago, you know, Warriors people have been saying that there's a strong likelihood that the central subway system won't be up and running until November. And where that's prevalent is, you know, a lot of people are wondering about the traffic and how much of a pain that's going to be. And where the central subway system goes into play is you can take a BART, you know, stop, I think, to Embarcadero, but you're going to have to then transfer lines on the central subway, you know, within that same building. So it's going to, you know, contribute to the inconvenience and all that, but the arena itself, as far as I know, is still on schedule.
You know, it's funny. Rick Welts sat down with me on my radio road show, Super Bowl 50, and he said, this is all going to be ready in 2019. And I'm thinking, geez, 2019, that day will never come. It seems so far in the future. But the central subway thing, if people don't know, after the earthquake in 89, the Embarcadero Freeway was torn down, which I'm so old, I used to take the Embarcadero Freeway to work. So that got torn down, and so everybody in Chinatown, all the businesses said, oh, my gosh, we're all going to go broke. No one will ever come to Chinatown or North Beach again. And they said, no, no, we're going to take the freeway down, but we're going to extend the subway. This was promised in 89. It still ain't ready yet, Mark. I know this isn't sports. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at it two ways. You know, the Warriors and sports teams have a way of, you know, forcing city officials to get things done a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that you're going to see if there's going to be any issues with the new arena, the number one thing is going to be the traffic and the convenience for people from Oakland to get there. And that's going to be one of many examples. I mean, when you talk to the Warriors, they've been, you know, really trying to tout the fact that there's so many different transportation options where there's going to be some amount of parking, but, you know, obviously limited, but most importantly that there's different public transportation options with doing the BART and one central subway is done doing that, getting on a Muni. There's a lot of, you know, opportunities to park a bike around the arena as well as, you know, it's going to be very friendly toward Uber and Lyft as far as pickup zones go. But San Francisco being what it is, I'm embracing for the worst with it.
Well, they think they have it all figured out, and they're very smart. And I went on a tour a couple of years ago, and they said they've got it down. So we'll all learn the shortcuts and what have you. I'm just glad they're not building at the place they originally said when they brought out Ahmad Rashad. They were going to build it right under the Bay Bridge, and I think that would have choked off the entire city. So where they are now, let's hope for the best. Now, hearing some stories from Michael Windhorst of ESPN saying that the Lakers feel a little hard done by the way Kawhi Leonard conducted his business as a free agent, and maybe even the Raptors, too, are a little bit taken aback that they had sent a plane for him, and they kind of feel like, well, he was going to the Clippers all along, and I don't have one iota of sympathy for either team. He's trying to figure out who's going to give him the best deal, and maybe he's using leverage. This has been going on time immemorial. This is what players do. So it's just kind of sour grapes, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's all the devil's in the details. I mean, we will never know what was discussed in the meetings, but, you know, I think the way I understand it, maybe the Lakers were led to believe that Kawhi had a pretty good shot, or they had a good shot with Kawhi simply because, you know, he was asking the Lakers to, you know, delay the timing of the Anthony Davis trade from becoming official because there were so many, you know, cap maneuvering ramifications with that. So I think that they may have gotten a signal that that meant that they were serious, you know, that he did have different meetings with Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss and Magic Johnson. But at the end of the day, this is what free agency is all about. I mean, when you're talking to the marquee guys, there's never a guarantee of anything. If they're taking visits with different teams.
What do you think about the fact that Bob Myers at the draft, I loved his tone. Here's three picks. And, you know, normally a GM's going to say, like about Jacob Evans, we like this kid. We think he can play three different positions and he's going to see some time. This year, he kind of looked at the three and said in front of all of us, hey, you're going to get out of this what you put into it. I mean, it was almost like he was telling it to Bell, Jordan Bell, you know? It was almost like, or McCaw. It's like, do you want to be an NBA player or not? Because we're going to give you every opportunity here on a pretty good team. I don't know. I kind of like that sort of a grandfatherly tone there.
Yeah, that press conference was interesting for a number of reasons. One, you could tell that Bob Myers didn't really want to be there, and he seemed pretty stressed out and had a lot on his mind. And I think it's safe to say it was all the things leading up into free agency with, you know, the meetings he had planned with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and the strong likelihood and eventual outcome of Kevin leaving and just what their plan B was going to be. So it seemed like Bob had a lot going on there, and he was just trying to get out of there as quickly as he could because he had all this business to attend to with, you know, all the free agency planning. But I definitely picked up on what you just outlined, and that was kind of the central thrust of what I wrote about with the draft picks, that his whole message to them was that of all the variables that determine whether these guys are going to be successful, it really lies on them. And I took that away from a number of different things. I think one, maybe it was Bob's indirect way of kind of addressing the recent criticism that the Warriors have gotten that, you know, their late first round picks really haven't panned out the way that they had hoped, you know, i.e. Jacob Evans and Jordan Bell. And I think, you know, Bob's larger point is that when you're getting these picks late in the first round, and especially when you're on a team that is so accomplished like the Warriors, like that's not really grounds to develop them fully because they got bigger priorities. They got all-star talent. They're trying to win. And so I think that his message was that, look, the parameters have shifted this offseason where these guys, it's not about them being able to buy minutes or anything. They're going to have to get significant minutes for better and for worse because there's no other options. So I think that was his early preparation to tell them that, you know, be ready what you signed up for and we'll do everything we can to try to help, but it's really going to be their responsibility. And, you know, they have a track record to show that logic works because when they selected Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, look, they were always intriguing prospects from the jump, but I don't think anyone projected that all of these guys would have the kind of careers that they ultimately had, and a lot of it had to do with the work that all those three guys put in.
Yeah, and not making excuses for Myers, but it is a case when you have two rounds, I kind of liken it to an NFL draft, which has seven rounds. If you want to take 60 picks and then stretch them over seven rounds, Bob Myers was basically swinging and missing on a late third or early fourth round pick. There's just not a whole lot of talent there, and that's why I think it's like, screw it. I don't need guys with all this upside. Just give me a 6'5" shooter. Even if he's sitting in the stands with his parents and pool, he's not even in the green room. And at first, you know, people say, oh, he's shooting 20%. What a bust after two summer league games. And then he gets to Vegas, he starts lighting it up. So I'm feeling a little bit better about that pick now, Mark.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Warriors are looking at, with the history of their late picks, someone like Kevon Looney, right, where his first two seasons did not look good. A lot of it had to do with his health, but then he blossomed, you know, into a pretty dependable role player. And look, you know, the Warriors re-signed him. It's unclear how he will do with these added minutes. I think, you know, as consistent as he has been, he's always been comfortable playing in kind of the low 20 minute range, and his minutes are probably going to go up next season because of all the different roster changes. And I don't know if he's equipped for that, but what I do know is that he's at least equipped to be that dependable role player that can fit different, you know, responsibilities at the center and forward spot. And so to kind of circle back to these draft picks this year, I think all of them, you know, show different things that can help the Warriors now, specifically with Jordan Poole and Eric Pascal, where, you know, Jordan Poole is going to have to make shots. There's no question about it, especially when you account for the fact that there's no Kevin Durant. Klay Thompson is going to miss, you know, probably half the season because of his injury. But the thing that left me encouraged about Summer League is that he did not allow his, you know, shooting accuracy to dictate his level of engagement and impact on the game. He was still playing with a lot of effort. He was moving the ball. He didn't seem fazed with guys that were trying to play him physically. And then Eric Pascal, like, he is, I think, the most ready because he's played 4 years in college and he's not being asked to have a scoring role. He's being asked to defend and do all those little things. And, you know, I talked with Jay Wright, his Villanova coach, mm-hmm. and he was saying in some ways he thinks that he could have an even better NBA career than he had in college simply because, you know, he was a lot of times much more physical than some of the other college players. A lot of times he just got offensive fouls because of his sheer strength, number one. And number two, he's not going to be relied upon to carry such a heavy scoring load because he can, you know, rely on Steph Curry and Draymond Green and others to do that. And so he's an ultimate team guy. So I think it's going to be very interesting how, you know, well they develop this year, knowing that they're going to get the minutes.
You know, by the way, we're speaking with Mark Medina, Warriors writer for the Merc. When people talk about Smiley Geach being a part of the team, and I think of him as still a teenager now, I mean, it would be great if he took that step, but it's, I don't know, I don't know if he's ready yet. You would know better than I, but I would think he would start off in Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not exaggerating if you're thinking of him as a teenager. He is, right? He's 18 years old, and, you know, the thing that's interesting is he's not signed to a two-way contract. So, you know, from a contractual standpoint, he's going to be able to be with the Warriors much more than if he was on that two-way contract because you know, on those deals, you can only be with the Warriors for up to 45 days. That doesn't mean that he's going to get a lot of time. I think the expectation is that he's going to spend a lot of time in Santa Cruz. But when I talked with Kent Lakeup and others in the organization, they're very high on him, but I think it's more of a thing that they think he's going to be very, very special long term, but short term, it's going to take a lot of work for him to develop. He's almost kind of like a poor man's Marc Gasol, and almost a similar idea of, you know, unlike Mark, he's not struggling with any weight issue per se. He's not seen as a heavy set guy, but he has all these skills that show that he could seemingly do everything, but it's very undeveloped and raw. And so I think as far as minutes go, it's probably going to be few and far between, but I'm sure he'll get some opportunities, but most of it will be in Santa Cruz.
You know, it's kind of funny because after all the weeks went by after the season, the Warriors basically had 1-3, and I know it's kind of a positionless league now, but they have one small forward in McKinney. They add Burks. They add Robinson now. And, you know, we know about Robinson, the dunk ability. We like Burks when he was at Utah a few years ago. How are these two guys going to fit in?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. They were already on a losing proposition with you know, losing Kevin Durant as far as how they fill that wing position. And then Andre Iguodala being kind of a casualty of the Warriors suddenly needing to make moves because of financial reasons, because they were hard capped. And there's not going to be any easy solution with that, because that is the position that I think the Warriors are weakest at. And some of these guys all provide something nice, right? Like Alec Burks can be a decent scorer, and Glenn Robinson has some athleticism. Alphonso McKinney is seen as a pretty good rebounder, but there's all these deficiencies as well, where it remains to be seen to what extent McKinney could be a good outside shooter. Can Alec Burks stay healthy? Same thing with Glenn Robinson III. And so I think that that's going to be the position that's ultimate by committee. Remember last year before DeMarcus Cousins came back, where that center spot was so fluid? I think that's what's going to happen at the wing position. You know, I think Alec Burks is probably the favorite to start to open the season, but I think that's going to be a revolving door, you know, based on all the different performances, based on matchups and what the positional need there as far as do they need a score, do they need a defender against a specific opponent. And there's no easy answers. I mean, if the Warriors wind up making a deal involving D'Angelo Russell or anything else, you know, before the trade deadline, I presume that it will be because they find a better alternative at the wing spot.
You know, it's kind of funny. We heard about the money for Cauley Stein being under $2 million, and then we hear, no, it's a 2-year deal for 4.4 or whatever it is. But you bring him in. I didn't think they would be able to get a guy like that. We'll see, you know, with his, he probably thought he was going to get paid this year, and so now he's barely in the league, so that'll light a fire under him. But then you look at another guy like Omari Spellman, the Schlenk guy, dealt for DJ, both 30th overall picks, won the title with the Wildcats at Nova with Pascal, and so they definitely know each other. But another guy who hit three bills and showed up to camp overweight, something that you almost never hear about in today's world of an athlete who spent the whole offseason getting fatter. So I'm just wondering about how Spellman fits into the equation.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I mean, I think the Warriors are aware, they're certainly aware of the weight issue. A lot of it, from what I understand, stem from two things. One, him being a young guy and not knowing any better, and he's been on record admitting as much. But also, he had, you know, some ankle injuries last year, and as a result of him being out, that contributed to him, you know, being out of shape. And so, you know, when we talked with him at Summer League, he was saying that he's been making progress and he's going to continue to make progress this whole offseason. I think the Warriors, you know, really made this deal for a few reasons. One, there was a financial component with, you know, getting Damian Jones' $2.3 million deal off the books, but also, as much as they wanted Damian to have a shot of, you know, proving that he can be this guy that they thought he could be, and knowing that he was limited last year with injuries, there was kind of a feeling that at some point you are what you are, right? And the Warriors also wanted some more, you know, flexibility at the center spot, where Damian Jones can only play the five, where if you look at all the other options right now, Willie Cauley-Stein will play the five, no doubt. But when you're looking at Amari Spellman and Draymond Green and Kevon Looney, all these guys can play both the four and the five. And so in this positionless day of basketball or era basketball, it kind of falls under that umbrella.
Something that kind of went under the wire a little bit too was the fact that Ron Adams is not going to the Lakers. He's not going to retire. He's going to stick around.
Yeah, he's going to be with the Warriors. I presume, you know, he got a little bit of a pay raise. That's usually what happens when you start getting wanted elsewhere. You have some leverage, but from my understanding, there's a different role a little bit. I mean, he'll still be kind of that old sage and, you know, that wise veteran assistant coach that has no aspirations to be a head coach. Therefore, there's no agendas and there's no concern of what the intentions are. And he's been there, done that, and he's a defensive guru. But from my understanding, you know, there might be some different tweaks as far as how much he travels. There might also be some tweaks as far as his teaching role goes, because, you know, this team is a lot younger and there's going to be a lot more emphasis on player development. But, you know, I would have been very surprised if Ron Adams would have gone to the Lakers for two reasons. One, he's in a much better spot, even if the Warriors aren't necessarily the Warriors of these past few years with losing some all-stars. But they're, I think, in a much more stable spot than the Lakers. And I think that the Warriors were going to do whatever it took to keep him, because he's such a valued member of Steve Kerr's staff.
Finally, Mark, there are still some names out there and some, I don't know if they're interesting or not, but I'm not talking about the Carmelos, but you know, the Joakim Noahs and the Mbah Moutes and others, the Andersons. Are the Warriors done? Because every time I think they're done, they get somebody else.
Yeah, I they're not technically done, but I think really the only thing that they have to figure out is their two-way contract, and that could wind up going to Kai Bowman or Damian Lee. They definitely need as much wing help as they can, so I would give the favor to Damian Lee and the fact that he's more experienced. But as far as the regular season roster, I don't think that the Warriors are going to, you know, flesh that out anymore, because I think, one, they want to save some money, but I think most importantly, they want to maximize flexibility with keeping that roster spot open in case that they have someone in training camp that just blows them away and really impresses them, or, and I think the more likely scenario is, they wind up being a shopper during the trade deadline, and it, you know, might require them taking on an additional player that they want. So I anticipate that the Warriors will have 14 players on the regular season roster to enter 2019-20.
There he is, Mark Medina. Follow him on Twitter at @MarkG_Medina. Read him in the Merck, the Bay Area News Group. Mark, enjoy your time off. We really appreciate your participation, and we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good. I appreciate you having me on, as always. It's always a good time.
Thank you very much. Mark Medina, everybody, he knows what's up, and the lines are open. Talking a little hoop here before we go to the break, 888-957-9570. Let's take a look at the Chilton Out of Body text line, 95795. Rich in Richmond says, Poole sucks. He shot 22%, averaged 14.5 during summer league. Carson Edwards shouldn't have been picked by the Warriors during summer league. Edwards short 48% from three, average 19.5 per game. Edwards is NBA ready. Well, Rich in Richmond, thanks for the text. You're not in the Rich, actually, if you're a 669. What is that? Richmond, Virginia, maybe? But look, the thing about Carson Edwards is he's 6 feet tall. I think when he puts his high tops on, they give him 6'1". And the Warriors weren't interested in that. They just weren't. They wanted a guy who was like 6'5", 6'6". Now, you might say, well, you're too obsessed with height. But the other thing is, Poole shot 22% for the couple of games in Sacramento. He did much, much better once he got down to Las Vegas. So let's be real with the numbers there. I have nothing against Carson Edwards if they had picked him. I like Carson Edwards a lot. It's just they didn't want to go with a 6 foot tall guy. That's all. They think the 6 foot five guy has a better chance getting his shot up and off. By the way, for those of you who are interested, this was on the Warriors website a couple days ago. It says that they are expanding their – they didn't ask me to read this. I'm just throwing it out there. Anyone's listening. They're expanding their in-game entertainment program. A variety of enhancements include they're going to have a band. They're going to have a rebranded hype team. They're going to have a special fan section. And so if you are a very talented acoustic or electronic musician, if you are a good singer, they will also they also want to talk to rappers as well. And for more information, go to bdentertainment.com/warriors/auditions. Once again, bdentertainment.com/warriors/auditions. And then it says the Warriors are also looking for athletic and passionate performers with specialized talents to join the team's rebranded hype team, formerly known as Hoop Troop. I think those are the guys that shot, you know, the T-shirts up in the crowd and all that. But for more information, go to warriors.com/hype team. Once again, warriors.com/hype team. And then the Warriors want to get like an ultras, like a curve of Sud in soccer, the South Curve. So they're trying to get a special fan section. And as a member of the exclusive section, fans will be invited to attend a select number of games during the upcoming season at a discounted rate and leading the cheers and chants throughout the game. So I was thinking maybe some songs as well, like European soccer. So visit warriors.com/fan section if you want to be – I'm calling it a Warriors Ultra. They're not calling that. I know a lot of teams, when you say Ultra, those are some bad connotations and denotations there. But if you think about like the San Jose Earthquakes, they have an awesome Ultra section. I'm a member. They made me an honorary member back at Buckshaw. But warriors.com/fan section. So there it is. You can be a part of it. It's a whole new beginning. Get on in and get heard. All right. Now, in the next segment, it's all about you. I have no guests, so you be my guest, be my guest. Angela Lansbury, Candlestick, Beauty and the Beast. That whole tale is old as time. 888-957-9570. Chilton, auto body text line 95795. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
As always, hella funky at 95.7 The Game. Love coming to you in some FM. By the way, if you want to know the difference, AM sounds like this. FM sounds like this. 888-957-9570. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. The 510 tells me the 669 is Morgan Hill / Gilroy. All right, that's the garlic number, 669. So, as I was saying earlier, and if you're just coming in, it's great to have you with us. The Giants, it's 11-3 in the ninth against the Mets, so it looks like they're going to go a game under. And it's fun to think about the fact that, you know, maybe this year they can make some noise, you know, within 2-3 games of the second wild card. And I think you would be doing your fan base a huge disservice if you decided to buy. Like, you could trade Joey Bart and Eliel Ramos. They're not going to do that. By the way, Drew Pomeranz is back in the pen tomorrow. The Giants prospect Connor Menez will be called up. This is from Hank Shulman at the Kron. And Menez is a guy who is 24 years old. He's risen steadily through the Giants system. Not a lot of fanfare. But he led all minor league left-handers in strikeouts last season, 171. And so far this year, 123 strikeouts, starting off with the Flying Squirrels at Double-A Richmond, and then going up to AAA Sacramento. So with Pomeranz right now, I mean, 1 year, $1.5 million deal. That was the sort of the big pickup at some point. But, you know, been torched for a startling 17 home runs right now in a pitcher's park like that. So we'll see what happens with him. But so right now, the Giants, who they lose today, it'll be, what, 14 out of 17 now with wins. For the time being, they're going to go with Menez, Bumgarner, Samardzija, Sean Anderson, who, by the way, acquired in the Nunez deal. Nunez DFA'd by Boston. And Tyler Beede, former first-round pick. So they'll see how their surge goes. But Bruce Bochy in the Shulman article said that the rotation will remain fluid, as we know. Is anything more fluid than the Giants' outfield in the first half of the season? Probably not. But I would like to hear from the baseball fans out there if you want the Giants to actually buy. You know, the A's, if they buy, I don't want them to buy too hard because, like, I don't want Lusardo or Puck to get dealt or Sean Murphy. You know, I would listen to Jorge Mateo. I would definitely listen to Barreto. You can have him. I know you got to give up something to get something. You know, these farcical trade propositions I get over the years. How about Sogard and Derek Norris for Jeter? I think Cashman will go for it, man. Farcical trade propositions are a staple in sports talk, sometimes from the host ourselves. So you just look at what's out there right now, and you wonder, what is out there? You know, pitching-wise, the Giants are obviously going to trade Will Smith. You say, why? We need him. Well, that's if you're on board. I'm not on board. I just don't think the Giants are going to pass. I mean, yeah, it's like, oh, we passed the Rockies and the Padres. Oh, we're only a game back from the Diamondbacks. Once again, get ready for it. Here it is. I don't see you getting past Milwaukee, St. Louis, or Washington. And plus, you lose three in a row, you're back being like the seventh team behind. It's just too tenuous right now. Let's go to Mo down in Pali. You're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, man. I love your show, bro.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun watching the Giants win games. But I think we would be remiss to think that, like, this is a legitimate playoff team. I mean, I like watching them win. I love this kid Dickerson, and Yaz has been great. All the pickups that Farhan has brought through in the second, you know, over the last month or so have been awesome. And I'm really excited to see where the team develops. But, you know, realistically, you know, it's a pretty mediocre team that's playing really well right now.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, I don't want to, like, I don't know, people are like, oh, you know, we're going to go all the way. And we're not going to go all the way. I mean, it's a 500 team, you know. I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I like the way Farhan has executed his plan. Every time he speaks, he's really clear about, like, yo, I'm here to make this the most competitive team possible. But yeah, I mean, I think people need to sort of just kind of temper their expectations for this club.
All right, thank you very much for the call. It's Mo out there. I'd like to hear from other baseball fans, Giant fans, at 888-957-9570. But, you know, you just look into before the season began, and you look at the top 30 prospects. Connor Menez is the grandson of Bill Plummer. You might remember him. He was a big league catcher. This is a guy who was a 14th round pick. And as I said, quietly coming through the system, but you lead all minor league pitchers and strikeouts for a lefty. That's not too shabby at all. But Connor Menez was the 21st prospect. Now, you talk about fluid. I mean, it's really, when you talk about the Giants, you talk about Joey Bart and Elio Ramos. 1-2. And it's too bad Bart got hurt, but he is going to get fast tracked there. Not on Bart. He's going to get there probably by next year. But, you know, you round out the top 10. Big league scouts, are they gushing over a Marco Luciano or a Logan Webb, a Sean Hiele, Jake Wong, Gregory Santos, Luis Toribio? I like Alexander Canario. He's a guy I think is very speedy. Heath Quinn, an outfielder, supposedly with a big bat. And, of course, they just drafted the kid Bishop out of Arizona State. Local guy who I think is going to be a big league player as well. So it's not that the cupboard is completely bare, old Mother Hubbard. But you have a chance to just stock it. And when you stock it, you can really, and it's not just for your, it's to make trades as well. This is what you do. I mean, to get the for the A's to get Homer Bailey, they gave up Kevin Merrill. Kevin Merrill was a first-round pick, competitive balance, but still counts as a first-round pick. And I remember seeing him at Stockton. And Jim Callis, who's kind of a Mel Kiper of the MLB draft, Kevin Merrill was his favorite player in the whole draft. Huge amount of speed. It's just great defense as a shortstop, just that the bat wasn't picking it up. Out in around 224 at AA. The Royals don't care. The Royals are just going to stock first-round picks, and that's smart for them. But, you know, you say, well, the Giants, I don't want to be like Dayton Moore. Dayton Moore, Dayton Moore, riding through the night. Remember that, Monty Python fans? That was Dennis Moore. Anyway, it was all about Lupins, too. Give us your Lupins, the highwayman. So do you really want to be Kansas City and just sell off parts? And it's like, well, that was going to be a very easy decision until the Giants started winning 14 out of 17. You know, because at that point, now Farhan is going to look like when Jerry Reinsdorf waved the white flag. You remember that? And so these deadline deals, you know, they're out there, but you need to get the talent to bring guys in. I mean, even Houston and New York, they make these trades. Even if it's a guy like Sonny Gray, right? And you go, oh, you give up Mateo and Dustin Fowler. He was supposed to be the best guy. He's, now that Ramon Laureano's there, Dustin Fowler is a ghost, basically, in that system. And James Kaprielian, top pick at UCLA. He's on the mend, still pitching right now. But you think the Yankees give a damn? And Sonny Gray didn't even work out for him. They don't care because they are stocked. And even when it doesn't work out, they can just buy somebody. I'm so jealous of that. I just want my team to win. I remember years ago there was this ad on BART for the A's, and it said it's better to build a team than to buy a team. And I just wanted to take all those and pull them out and rip them up. It's just, that's celebrating cheapness. I hate it when cheapness is celebrated. It's like if you buy a Yugo and your friend buys a Mercedes and his Mercedes breaks down and your Yugo keeps running. Ha ha, I was the smart one. No, you weren't. You were cheap and you got lucky. So shut up. I actually have A's fans tell me, you know how many wins we got for our payroll? Why do you care? Why are you celebrating being cheap? Like, I bought this thing at Kmart. It lasted forever. Well, great. Good for you. You were cheap and you lucked out. Nice. I just want to win. Or as Nacho Libero, quote him again. I just want to win. I want to win, Chancho. Do you think Diamondback fans, after the World Series, said, well, you know, we didn't draft Curt Schilling, and, you know, we made that acquisition of Randy Johnson. So, no. You think Astro fans are like, well, you know, we got Verlander in an August deal, a waiver deal. They don't even exist anymore.
He wasn't even really an Astro.
No one says that when you're at a parade and smoking a cigar and you got your shirt off and your six-pack in the sun. That's not me, by the way. That's more Jordan Bell. But still, that's what I want. I just want my team to win. Now, you don't want to be profligate, and you don't want to be stupid, and you don't want to give away the whole farm system on some dumb deals. You know, there are some deals that are like, in baseball history, is like, oh, how stupid. Like, people always point to the Tigers traded John Smoltz for Doyle Alexander to the Braves. You know, John Smoltz, they traded a Hall of Famer for him. What people don't remember, and I do, because I was in college, Texas was the largest of our 48 states at that time. Alexander was fantastic for Detroit at that time. And they were a second-place team. They were behind the Blue Jays, and they ended up winning the East by two games. They lost in the ALCS to the Twins. But Alexander almost won the Cy Young. He had 11 starts with the Tigers. He won 9 of them. His ERA was 1.5. But you hear about it later. Oh, you gave up a Hall of Famer. Well, yeah, that was the price you paid. But that trade actually worked. You can get some of these trades, you know, the Giants always point to, they will say like a Ryan Garko type of trade, like a ho-hum type of trade. But you look at a game like a guy like Steve Pierce, no one cared about him when the Red Sox picked him up. And of course, they were fighting for first place in the East, and what happened last year? They won the East by 8 games. They had their most successful season in the history of the team, never won more games. And Pierce is the World Series MVP and batted 333 had a 500 on base, three home runs in the World Series. So that's the kind of case when you get more lucky than good, because, you know, as I said, the Red Sox, they don't need huge help. But if you can find that guy, I mean, the Giants got lucky with Cody Ross. If you think about that outfield in 2010, they're all guys that were released from other teams, with Burrell and Andres Torres. And by the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, radio.com sports station. Rick Tittle with you for another hour. Herbs at 5. But John Baker told me he was best friends with Cody Ross when they were at the Marlins. And Cody went to the front office and he said, I'm gone. And they said, who are you traded for? He's like, nobody. It's like, what? The Giants put in a claim for him because they thought the Padres would take him. They didn't even want him. They just didn't want the Padres. Remember, the Padres were the team that was surging. The Padres should have won the NL West that year, and they choked. And it almost got down to the one-game playoff if the Giants hadn't won on the last day of the season. And what happened? Ross the Boss, the greatest baseball player ever out of New Mexico. I think there were a couple others. Doing well for the land of enchantment. But as I said, you know, sometimes you just need to make that bold move. Remember when the Astros got Randy Johnson? Now, Randy Johnson ended up in Seattle because Mariners had to have Mark Langston. Remember that? And trading Randy Johnson, the Expos, Randy Johnson and Holman, just tons of talent. Well, then the Astros need a rental on Johnson. They traded Freddy Garcia, Carlos Guillen, and John Halama. Ended up being a pretty good trade. Well, what happened with the Astros? The Astros were in first place at the time. Of course, this is when they were in the NL Central. They cruised to the NL Central, but then they lost in the divisional series to the Pods. And I think a lot of people don't even remember Randy Johnson pitching for the Astros, just like a lot of people don't remember that Randy Johnson pitched for the Giants. Remember when he got the K record that was in D.C. and like almost a rainout? But he won 10 out of 11 starts. His ERA was under 2, but he started twice in the divisional series and didn't win either one of them. You get these big trades. Remember when the Dodgers got Manny the first time? What was that, like 10, 11 years ago? That was a three-team deal. Dodgers got Manram. Red Sox got Jason Bay, the pride of Canada. The Pirates got Brandon Moss, Craig Henson, Andy LaRoche, Brian Morris. Dodgers ended up winning the West, but they lost to the Phils. Remember, that was the World Series where the Phillies won the World Series and Joe Blanton hit a home run in the World Series. I think most fans around here, especially Giants fans, remember the crime dog trade. And when the Padres were going to trade, remember, the talent the Padres had was ridiculous. Both Alomar brothers and Sheffield and Randy Reddy, and, you know, they had Ozzie Smith, they had Dave Winfield. They're so famous for trading away great players. But the crime dog, the rumors were, I remember this was when I was working at Sports Channel, because we were doing A's and Giants. But the rumor was the Padres wanted one of the top three prospects in AAA from the Braves, and that was Javi Lopez, the catcher, the first baseman, Ryan Klesko, or the number one overall pick, the third baseman, Chipper Jones. And they were not going to give up McGriff without Lopez, Klesko, or Jones in the deal. And then we found out the deal, and the Braves traded Vince Moore, Donnie Elliott, and Melvin, it's snowing, Nieves for McGriff. At that time, the Braves were 8 games behind the Giants. I know this hurts, Giants fans, 8 games behind, and they won the NL West by 1 game. And we remember the Solomon Torres game in L.A. We remember the next year or year after, we had wild card. Not then. If it's any consolation, the Braves lost in the NLCS to the Phillies, that great team with Darren Dalton and John Kruk and those guys. That was, and remember when McGriff showed up at Fulton County Stadium, the press box caught on fire. So they changed his name from the crime dog to the fire dog. That one still hurts around these parts. You think about the Carlos Beltran trade, and I'm not talking about Mets to Giants for Zach Wheeler. I'm talking about 15 years ago when Beltran was playing in the outfield with Johnny Damon and Jermaine Dye in Kansas City, and the Astros made the move again. And this, they were 7 games back in the Central when they were behind St. Louis by 7 games when they made the trade. And that was a 3-team trade. The Astros got Beltran, the A's got Octavio Dotel, and the Royals got John Buck, Mike Wood, and the pride of Canada, and most importantly, St. Mary's College, former A's high pick, Mark Tian, who was a Moneyball pick, by the way. Went on to have some good years with Kansas City. So they were 7 games back. What happened in the end? Well, they won the wild card by 1 game, and they lost the NLCS to St. Louis. And you think about it, 4 home runs in the NLDS, and then Beltran had a home run in each of the first 4 games in the NLCS. So 8 home runs in 2 playoff series, and a lot of people regard this as the greatest ever.